now listening to True Murder, the most shocking killers in true crime history, and the authors that have written about them. Gacy, Bundy, Dahmer, The Night Stalker, BTK. Every week, another fascinating author talking about the most shocking and infamous killers in true crime history. True Murder, with your host, journalist and author, Dan Zupansky.
Good evening. By 1966, Hot Springs, Arkansas wasn't your typical sleepy little southern town. Once a favorite destination for mobsters like Al Capone and Lucky Luciano, illegal activities continued to lure out-of-state gamblers, flim-flam men, and high rollers to its racetracks, clubs, and bordellos. Still, the town was shaken to its core after a girl was found dead on a nearby ranch. The ranch owner claimed it was an accident. Then the rancher was found to be the killer of another woman, his fourth wife. The story begins when 13-year-old Kathy Ward was found dead after horseback riding at Black Snake Ranch on the outskirts of Hot Springs, Arkansas. Frank Davis, the owner of the ranch, tells authorities Kathy's death is an accident. He claims her foot caught in a stirrup and she was dragged to her death despite his pursuit of the runaway horse. People who know the 42-year-old skilled horseman don't believe his story, and soon rumors of her rape and murder began swirling around town. The rumors reach a crescendo after Davis viciously guns down his fourth wife and mother-in-law in broad daylight outside of a laundromat. Davis is arrested and charged with first-degree murder. Soon after, Hot Springs authorities reopen the investigation into Kathy Ward's death. Snake Eyes is the first book to examine this notorious villain, featuring personal interviews, crime scene records, court documents, and Davis's own prison files. Author and lifelong Hot Springs resident Biddy Martin reveals the true story for the very first time. The book that we're featuring this evening is Snake Eyes, Murder in a Southern Town, with my special guest journalist and author, Biddy Martin. Welcome to the program, and thank you so much for this interview, Biddy Martin.
Thank you for inviting me, Dan.
Thank you so much for joining us with this incredible tale. First off, tell us how you came. We know that you are a Hot Springs resident, but tell us how you came to this story, when and how you came to this story.
Kathy Ward, the 13-year-old girl that died that day at Black Snake Ranch, was our junior high school friend. And it was very shocking to us. We'd never experienced a death like that of a peer. The rumors of rape and murder began, and it haunted us because we never really knew what happened to her. They said she was dragged to death by a horse, but it was at that time we never knew what really happened, and it's haunted us. And we have gone through a lifetime wondering about the truth. And then in 2014, I called my friend Leslie, who was a childhood friend, and told her that I wanted to start digging up this story. I want to see if I could just find Kathy's obituary. Again, we never knew what happened. If it hadn't been for a spooky event that followed, I would have never started researching and interviewing and writing this book. But what I found out is that Kathy was a little princess in a town not far from here. And her father was a doctor. Her parents separated and her mother moved to Hot Springs in the early 60s. She was a family of divorce and tried to fit in here in Hot Springs with all the kids who had been here all of our lives. By the time she had gone through school, she had acclimated and was doing very well. But one thing that she wanted by the time she reached junior high school was to go horseback riding with some friends out at Black Snake Ranch. Her mother was a typical mother, I guess, of a single parent, and she had things that she wanted to do, and sometimes they were to go to the nightclubs here in Hot Springs. Kathy was left at home at times and with her siblings, but they got through it, and she, by the time she became 13, she had started dating the quarterback at the junior high school, and everything was going her way, except her mother wouldn't allow her to go horseback riding with her girlfriends. But for some reason, 3 weeks after Kathy finished the seventh grade, her mother relented and allowed her to go out to the ranch. Well, of course, we all know what happened then. She died. Supposedly, she was dragged to death by a horse. That's what the owner, Frank Davis, the ranch, told the sheriff's deputies. And that's what was accepted. After the investigation, they declared that, yes, indeed, it was an accident. So Frank was let off the hot plate and was living his life with his fourth wife. He had two children, a little toddler and a boy. But for some reason, I guess he was troubled. 46 days after Kathy's death, his wife leaves him. She takes the children and she goes to her parents' home and lives with them. And Frank is desperate to be with her and to have the children with him. And he calls her every day, day in and day out, wanting her to come back home and to bring the children back home. But she won't. She tells him no, or just call me back later and I'll get back with you. And so Frank's in a stew. He begins stalking her in the fall of 66, and she's downtown and shopping and going from store to store. And for some reason, she just happens to look, and there's Frank driving slowly down the street watching her. And she's so frightened that she goes to a lawyer and she files for divorce. By January of 1967, for some reason, Frank thinks that she's coming back to him. There's no indication why, but he just believes that. So he and his mother go back out to the ranch and wait for her one Sunday afternoon, but she doesn't. Sharon never arrives with the children, and he's in a stew because his mother had gone with him and they were waiting all day, supposedly all afternoon, for Sharon to come and bring the children. It was just going to be a celebration. 4 days after that, Frank is in a stew. He has a ranch hand that he had employed just to watch Sharon. He'd been watching her for quite a while and following her daily pattern. She was a beautician for Frank's mother, who had two beauty shops. He called her up one afternoon, which happened to be Frank's mother's birthday, and tells Frank, oh, she's here at the beauty shop. And for some reason, Frank had been in a stew all day. Frank goes over there. He watches covertly his mother-in-law drive up to the beauty shop to pick up Sharon. They drive off, and he claims he didn't follow them. But later that evening, Frank finds them across town at a laundromat. He drives up to the laundromat and gets in an argument with his mother-in-law while Sharon's inside switching the clothes from the washer to the dryer. After she's finished that, she comes walking back out and gets in a car, and Frank is parked side by side to their car behind the laundromat, and he and Sharon start talking, and for some reason, he reaches behind him and there happens to be a shotgun. He pulls it out and just, bam, shoots Sharon. The mother-in-law starts screaming, jumps out of the car. She was holding a baby, sitting right beside Sharon, who was in the driver's seat, and there was a toddler in the back seat. She jumps out of the car, runs out, and runs into the laundromat, and just as she hits the back door, Frank aims at her, bam, shoots her. She falls down, and the children are in the car alone, but the police find him later at his mother's house because there were witnesses this time. There weren't any witnesses when Kathy died, or so we think.
Right.
They find the owner knew it was Frank, and this is real odd. The owner of the laundromat lived right up the street from Frank's mother.
Mm-hmm.
In the other direction, the uncle of Sharon's uncle lived in the other a block away. So there was like this Bermuda Triangle of homes and families involved in this one crime. That's pretty eerie, I think. But
yes.
The police do find Frank at home, and they take him away. And he had passed out probably from drinking so much that day, but they have him examined, and then they take him to the jail, and he goes through the process, and they charge him with murder. In the meantime, though, Sharon lives an hour later after she's been shot. They rush her to the hospital, and she does live an hour, and she is able to tell them who shot her. The mother-in-law is taken by ambulance to Little Rock, to a large hospital there, where she undergoes surgery. She makes it. But Frank does go through a trial a year later. But now, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to back up, because after Frank murders his wife in January of 1967, in April of 1967, the authorities reopened Kathy's case, because originally there had been so many rumors of rape and murder, and people had all pointed their fingers at Frank because they knew that he had a bad reputation. They knew that he was a skilled horseman and he could have caught a horse. That he told them that she had died from falling off of a runaway horse and dragged to death. Well, they knew that he could have caught that horse, but the authorities opened up Kathy's case. And what they find during a grand jury trial is that Sharon, who is now deceased, had written a note and put it in a lockbox at the bank where her uncle, who lived a block away from Frank's mother, where her uncle was vice president of the bank, she put it in a lockbox. And I guess her uncle told the authorities, well, hey, there's a lockbox of Sharon's. Let's see what's in it. And she'd written in a note. And from that note, and this is what Dr. Ward, Kathy's father, told me, because it's a grand jury evidence and that can't be
revealed.
FOI. There's no way that they could give me that information without a court order. But it had to be from the note that Sharon wrote, that the grand jury said, indeed, it wasn't that Kathy didn't die accidentally. It was murder. And so Frank was charged with Kathy's murder. So he was charged a few months after murdering his wife with Kathy's death. But the prosecuting attorney said that they would first go through, they would have Sharon's trial, and they would put Kathy's murder charge on the back burner until they went through this first trial.
So now you're talking about he is now indicted for first degree murder, and now they reopen the investigation into Kathy Ward's death. And then they found some information that Sharon, before she died, was alert enough to be able to put this information in a lockbox. And now the authorities have that information, as you said, from a ranch hand, as you write, from a ranch hand that said he knew exactly what had happened and he had witnessed it.
Yes.
So now the information that you find from this grand jury investigation and from your own investigation, what do you find really happened that day, despite what Frank Davis had to say?
Okay. Well, from what I learned is that he supposedly took one of the little girls who was there with Kathy riding horses. He took her to search for Kathy as a cover-up. And supposedly she found, the little girl found Kathy's body.
Right.
And that was his. But then he told the deputies that she had died from a runaway horse. So which story do you believe? This story that I was told about the little girl that went with him and found her body was told to me several years into my research and investigation of the story. And I tend to believe that it's true.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now, he is sent to the state hospital. There's going to be psychiatric evaluation. But right, as you write, very, very interestingly, right from the very beginning, when he was passed out at his mother's house, when he awoke, he was incredulous that he had done anything, that he had committed a murder. Of course, total amnesia after he had spotted Sharon, after those events that just transpired after, including the shooting. Of course, he had no memory, supposedly, of any of that. Tell us a little bit about the kind of behavior he exhibited in prison and the defense that the defense was trying to put forward at this trial.
Okay. While he was in prison, they sent him to the state hospital, and he spent a lot of time there with the doctor telling these bizarre stories about how people were always following him, and they were always out to get him. He also told them that he would make a great astronaut, and he never once recognized, he thought the whole time that he was at the state hospital that he was there because of his stomach issues. And this goes back to his serving in World War II. He was a flight officer and was discharged in 1945 because of stomach problems. And throughout the years, he would go to different doctors for his stomach problems. And one told him that, oh, it's all in your head. And another one said, oh, no, you do have stomach problems. But he actually thought that while he was there being examined by this psychiatric doctor at the state hospital after murdering his wife, that he was there because of his stomach problems. He did tell them that when he was being held in a holding cell in Hot Springs after having murdered after the incident, that 3 days later, they allowed him to read a newspaper, and that's when he read about the story about his wife's death. But he never once admitted it, never.
In keeping with his background when he was young, you write about that his mother never criticized him and thought in reaction to his bad behavior when he was very young that she would just spoil him more, that she would give more attention to him.
Yes, she pampered him. She babied him. He was the only child, and she gave him everything. He had 25 to 50 horses that she would stable all over Hot Springs, and I'm not going to go into all of her. He used his mother like an ATM machine. That's what I will tell you.
Mm-hmm. And she had financed this Black Snake Ranch endeavor as well.
Yes, she had. He had another ranch in a different part of the county, and then she bought him this Black Snake Ranch, and they thought that he was finally getting it all together because he had married Sharon, and they'd had 2 children, and they thought that everything was right in his world, but then Kathy died out at the ranch.
Mm-hmm.
Then his wife left him. Then he murdered his wife, and so now he's at the state hospital, and he told the doctor there that he was the best teacher of boys, that just give him some and he'd have them going the right way, and that they were easier to train than a horse. And he was a little bit bizarre.
Now, this case is a death penalty case, and in the state, it's the electric chair as the choice of death. And so the mother bankrolls good representation. Ironically, on the night that Sharon planned her escape from Frank, he had been involved and supporting a circuit judge for election, Bob Ridgway. Now, in this trial, his mother bankrolls the defense, and he is with an attorney named Holt and also this Bob Ridgway that he had coincidentally supported. So their defense that they're trying to mount is an insanity defense. And so when you talk about his background, now his mother and others are employed to be able to give this background to support this insanity defense, don't they?
Right. There are several witnesses that talk about his bizarre behavior. One of them is his mother tells them about Frank in 1 week bought 5 cars. Now, what mother buys her son 5 cars in 1 week? But what was so telling about that is one of the witnesses said that Frank somehow backed up one of those cars to a tree and he left the engine going. And this was at his mother's house, and it was in the front yard. And the neighbor was nearby, and the engine, he turned it on, I think it was like a Saturday night, and the next day it was still there, hiked up on that tree, the back bumper, and the engine was still going, and the man was just curious, and he went over there and knocked on the front door to find out what happened. And Frank said, oh, I just wanted to see how long it would take for how many miles or whatever for the gas to run out, something crazy like that. But Frank would do crazy things like that. He was now living at his mother's house in town. His ranch was outside of town. And that same man said that Frank would throw beer cans and liquor bottles out in the yard. Now, who does that? But he was just very bizarre. And the neighbors recognized that, and so did his mother. He also did some crazy things, like chasing cars down a road and hollering at them and falling down on the ground and hitting his head and just doing crazy things like that. But he wasn't normal.
You talk about that there was a diagnosis of manic depressive reaction. So basically that he had this mood disorder, a psychiatric disorder, but then there was this element of this explosive rage suddenly. So always depressed, manically depressed, manic, and then in these events of rage. And then they cited so many witnesses that said things like he threw himself on the ground and banged his head on the ground. So, and many people described it, including his mother and other people, as tantrums, like a very much like a young child would have.
Right. And one of the psychiatrists compared it to his son's childish tantrums. And then they also brought out the faking bad, that Frank was faking bad. And the different doctors, they finally had a team that came down and made a conclusion that he needed actually to stay in the state hospital, spend more time in the state hospital. And this was when he was being examined.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, the trial progresses. And of course, you mentioned that the dueling psychiatrist, of course, his psychiatrist claiming that he didn't know right from wrong. And of course, these other psychiatrists saying very well that he was certainly sane at that time and was not suffering from any mental illness that would mitigate this death penalty sentence. Before we get to what happens at this trial, let's stop for these messages from our sponsor, which is Best Fiends. It was a typical night. Lisa and I had dinner, talked a little bit about her work. Then suddenly I disappeared. But no worries, I was just spending some quality time playing Best Fiends. You may have people wondering about your sudden disappearances, but I totally understand if you enjoy playing as much as I do. What I like the most about Best Fiends is that it's totally distracting. I'm completely immersed and I lose myself in playing every time. I just pick up and play a few levels anytime I have a few minutes. It feels great to beat another level or get in the zone. I'm at level 870 right now, slow but steady. Best Fiends is a free-to-download mobile puzzle game featuring always new adventures and challenges and thousands of levels. With dozens of unique fiends to collect, you customize a team of your fiends to defeat the menacing slugs. Power up your favorite fiends to new levels and watch as they transform and get stronger. You can even play offline if internet connection is lost. New events and challenges pop up all year. There's chances to earn exclusive in-game items, characters, and rewards. Download your new favorite getaway, Best Fiends, for free today on the App Store or Google Play. You'll even get $5 worth of in-game rewards when you reach level 5. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. Now, Biddy, we were talking about what was happening at this trial. Despite this expensive and talented defense team and their psychiatrist that were testifying that he didn't know right from wrong at the time of the murder of his wife and the shooting of his mother-in-law, let's talk about what happens with the charges regarding and the investigation regarding Kathy Ward.
Okay. Kathy's murder charge is on the back burner while they're going through his trial. And Frank is sentenced to death. Knowing that, Kathy's parents realize that he's going to be in prison, and they're glad about that. But here he goes to prison, and he's on death row. So he's sitting on death row, and his mother's in the background trying to pull strings for him. Well, there's one that she didn't need to pull, but it was a lucky one. And it's that the governor, Governor Winthrop Rockefeller, is going out of office and he decides to pardon death row. He's against the death penalty and he decides he's going to pardon all of them. And Frank's one of them. And he becomes a member of the general prison population and he gets a life sentence.
Right.
So now he's a lifer. Knowing that, Kathy's parents and the prosecuting attorney, everyone knows that now he's in for life. And Kathy's parents decide that they don't want to go through another, they don't want to go through a trial. They can't handle it. So they decide that not to proceed with it, and they discourage it. And the prosecuting attorney, because of that, decides to cancel that process, and they remove the charges because everyone thinks Frank's now in prison for life and there's no way he's going to get out.
Right.
Little do they know that in the meantime, while Frank's in for life now, he's able to get out around the prison, and he becomes a trustee because of his background, his college degree in agriculture from Texas Tech. He can ride a horse and he can handle the cattle, and he's good at that. And they make him a trustee. In that capacity, Frank takes advantage and he begins slipping out of prison and is seen up here in Hot Springs.
Wow.
His mother-in-law swears that she was so frightened of him, she wouldn't leave her house after dark, and she couldn't drive because of her injuries from the gunshot wound, but she would find cigarette butts outside in her backyard on the back steps. She was convinced that was Frank Davis. They said that his girlfriend was meeting him and bringing him up here to Hot Springs. The county clerk also swears that she saw him one year at the county fair, that out of corner of her eye, she saw something, looked back, and there was Frank with his hand gesturing like a gun, pointing at her.
Right.
He was frightened. He was up here haunting people. Other people said that they saw him at the county fair. Can you imagine whispering, "There's Frank Davis.
Yeah.
He's in Hot Springs. How did he get out of prison?"
Yeah.
But he would slip out of prison and get back. So he took full advantage of that. In the meantime, because he was now a lifer, his mother started a crusade to get him paroled. She found an attorney down there near the prison and who was very well connected in the political world here in Arkansas. And she hired him to start working on Frank's parole. And she also would do other things like get very distinguished people here in Hot Springs to sign a document saying that he should be released from prison and such. But she was in the background trying to pull strings to get him out of prison while he was actually doing a lot of it on his own.
Mm-hmm. You say that he's between his mother and himself, he's trying to get this parole hearing. What's interesting is that, and people opposed to this are saying, he started off with being slated for execution. Then it was commuted to a life sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're calling every bit of his time as at least 15 years that would then allow him potentially to apply for parole. So they, again, massaged everything and everyone to be able to try to get this from a death penalty case to eligibility for parole. Not to say that it was guaranteed, but his mother and the attorneys got to the point where he was deemed eligible for parole, which was incredible, really, considering.
It was. In fact, he had some problems in prison, but he would make up. I don't know how he did it, but he finally got in their good graces and he worked his way through this trustee situation. And somehow he was able to get reassigned to another prison in Arkansas that was lower level. It wasn't the high security type prison. Right. And he went there to this other location where actually it's where they raised all the cattle for the prison system. So he was a great asset to them because of his background. He was a U.S. cattle inspector after he graduated from college. And I guess they thought this would be a good thing. And they took him, and it was at a different part of the state, which coincidentally was not far from Murfreesboro, where Kathy's father lived.
Right.
And one night, Dr. Ward received a phone call that Frank Davis had gone down here. I'll take care of him. But they later, he took off on a horse. And while this was going on, I think it was a Friday night, word got down here to Hot Springs, because that's about 3 hours away up in the northwestern part of the state. The newspapers covered the story about Frank's escape, and people were scared down here. He was frightening. He had terrorized Hot Springs. And they remembered the murders. They remembered Kathy's brutal murder and his wife's horrible death out there at the laundromat. And people were afraid of him. They set up some roadblocks for him up there near the prison where he escaped. And finally, 2 days later, they found him and his horse. When they found him, he had tied his horse to a tree because he said he had just given up on him and he was on foot. So they took him from that prison and took him back to the high security prison and put him into the cell block down there. And again, he was able to, he was a smoozer. He was very gregarious and he worked his way back into their good favor. And with his mother's help, they just kept pulling strings. And he started doing research and met a man that worked there in the prison who would help prisoners try to get them out of the prison system for one reason or another, their health or their loved ones were sick. And for whatever reason, he was there trying to advocate for them and get them out of the prison system. So Frank was sending off letters to various ones to his attorneys. He had these attorneys his mother had gotten, and he found some new attorneys based on some research he had done about a murder in another town with a man that had the same situation as him. But he was pulling strings while his mother was trying to pull strings to get him out of the prison. But in the meantime, he married his fifth wife. She obviously was the woman who had been going down to the prison and bringing him back up here to Hot Springs. Mm-hmm. In my research, I found out that she was at his mother's house the night that he murdered Sharon, his fourth wife.
Wow.
And that she also had a baby in July after Frank murdered Sharon in January. This woman who would become his fifth wife had their baby in July of that year.
Incredible.
But they never had married, but she had stayed in touch with Miss Davis, Frank's mother, Irene. And I guess they decided to get married, and he was able to get out on a leave to marry his fifth wife. And that's when the problem started. That's when he had been taken to this new low security prison and had escaped. And they said that sometimes prisoners would do that because of family matters. In the meantime, they were having the mother and his wife were doing all they could to get him out of prison. They'd write him letters. They were big letter writers, and they supported him through every episode. I'm sure that he still had his chronic stomach issues, and they were there backing him up. And not only did he have his mother babying him, he had a wife that was treating him the same way. And I guess that's, he never really, in my viewpoint, he never really could become a responsible grown adult because he was treated like a child all of his life by his mother. And I think she did a disservice to him for treating him that way. So there he is in prison doing everything he can to get out. When it looks like it is promising, the local newspapers, because the parole board brings him up to parole, and every time he comes up to parole, I did hear this most recently from Kathy Ward's mother's cousin, who just contacted me recently. She said that Sarah Ward would go to the parole board every time to talk against them releasing him. And there was also an insurance agent here in town that Frank had threatened, and he was always there. And Dr. Ward would speak up also, and they were always against parole. And he went through several of them where he was denied by the new governor and such. But it got down to the point to where he was eligible parole because his mother's attorneys had finally found some loopholes, and he was up for parole. When that got back to Hot Springs, the judge and several law authorities and such would write against it. But what happened is that the editor of our local newspaper wrote a front page editorial against his parole. And that's when I found out. It was like a gem had fallen out of the sky. And it was just, I was so excited because in that editorial was finally the proof of the note that Sharon had left in the lockbox that Frank had murdered a little black boy who must have been one of the ranch hands. And that's where it's a loop here, is where he told Sharon about what he had witnessed when Frank murdered Kathy.
Right.
And supposedly Frank murdered him. Well, there it was in the newspaper. They said that it was alleged that he had murdered murdered Kathy and his wife, Sharon. But also it was rumored that he had murdered a little black boy there at the ranch. So all of that came together in that editorial with the editor fighting to keep Frank from being released from prison.
Let's use this as an opportunity to stop for a second for these messages. Now, you talk about that there is this possibility, even though they have this new information about this little black boy, possibly a ranch hand, one of these foster kids that worked at the farm. Now, he is released, despite all of that. Now, he's released, and the media, obviously, and the people of Hot Springs are opposed. Judge Britt is definitely opposed and says publicly that it's a big mistake. Tell us about what happens in your investigation of what happens to Frank afterwards. And also tell us a little bit about this skateboard secret.
Okay. Frank finally is paroled in the dark of the night. He leaves the prison, and they've made a pact with Oregon. There's some kind of process where He had an uncle up there, and that he would go to Oregon to live under the supervision of his uncle in Oregon. So he's up there, and his mother is now on her fourth husband, and she and her fourth husband and Frank's fifth wife and his child by that wife live in Oregon. And Frank is there. I think it's like in January of 84, he's released and goes to Oregon, and his mother dies not long after they're there in Oregon, but she does get to spend several months with her son finally as a free man in there in Oregon. And he is there. He's back to his old ways where he was always a horse trader, and he has some friend up in that area. Not in the Portland area, but up in Washington, where he goes to do some horse trading and dies up there. And the prison gets notice that he's died in Washington while he's visiting his friend. But they conduct an autopsy, and it is declared by natural causes. So Frank, by that time in 1984, has died, and his wife moves back to Hot Springs. But what's so telling about that is that all the years that Frank was on the front page of the newspaper during the trials and the murders and the trials. When he dies, he's relegated to this tiny little column on the side of the newspaper, and it's not even the top story in that digest column. He's the fourth story down. Mm-hmm. So he's finally out of the people's grasp. But I think because it was that little story, he never had an obituary because it was just so nondescript that people really didn't realize that Frank Davis was dead. And they still think he's alive and they're still afraid of him. There are people who would not give me interviews because they were afraid that he was still alive.
Incredible.
So I'm going to go to the story about that it all comes full circle about the skateboard. Days before Kathy Ward died at Black Snake Ranch, she had been skateboarding with my neighbor across the street, with Leslie. And Kathy left her skateboard at Leslie's house. After she died, a few days later, Kathy had left her skateboard there and Leslie had hidden it in a bush and told her, well, I'm going to camp, to church camp with the twins. That's me and my twin. And I'll be back on Friday. Let's go skateboarding this weekend. But then we get home and we find out that Kathy's died out on this terrible, tragic accident out at the ranch. Leslie goes outside and she finds Kathy's skateboard still there, stuck in some bushes where she had left it for Kathy to pick up that week while she was gone. Leslie's had that skateboard all these years.
Wow.
In 2014 is when she thought it was lost. And that's when her handyman finds it up in the attic on the 48th anniversary of Kathy's death. And that was a mystery there, too, because Leslie didn't know when it was found. And I asked her, and she said, well, I wrote him a check, and she gave me the date. And after I discovered the date of Kathy's death, I put two and two together and realized that Kathy's skateboard had reappeared on the 48th anniversary of her death. She wanted this story told, and now it is told in the book, Snake Eyes, Murder in a Southern Town.
Yes. You talk about, too, that there was a grave site, the unknown where she was buried. And so a friend involved in this story, somewhere along the line, made it his business to find out. And so you visit the grave site. Don't you?
Every year on June 24th, Leslie and I drive up to Murfreesboro, Arkansas, which is about an hour away, to visit Kathy at the Murfreesboro Cemetery. I guess it was probably the second year, actually, we were there. We were taking pictures because Leslie would always bring Kathy's skateboard and we'd take flowers. And we were getting a picture with us with Kathy's skateboard that year. When we got back in the car, I wanted to look at them and I showed it to Leslie. The picture of Leslie holding the skateboard right there at Kathy's headstone, the pixels were distorted, but it's what the distortion came from the headstone and traveled upward like there was somebody next to Leslie. It was just this black, eerie figure standing there beside Leslie. That's never happened before, and it's never happened since. And I believe that there was more to it than just, and it wasn't a dysfunction of the camera. I think that Kathy was there with us that day. Call me crazy, but I do.
I believe you. Absolutely. This book is very important to you and very personal. Tell us a little bit about this book release, when it's to be released or when it was released, and also if there's a website that people might take a look at about this book.
The book was released this past Sunday. It's done very well here in our area. People are sending me notes every day. I've got the book, but they're also excited because this Sunday I'm going to be holding a book signing and program, and within this program they really don't know what's going to happen, and we don't until it happens that day. But it's going to be a big celebration for us, and it's also going to be a closure because we never attended her funeral. So it's finally, after all these years, we're going to be able to say goodbye to Kathy. Now, I do have a website. and it's BittyMartin.com. That's BittyMartin.com. There's a lot of information on there, and I have all my speaking engagements. I'll be at a lot of different book clubs. I have a presentation and PowerPoint that I give to all these different groups, and I'll be at one tomorrow morning at 6:30, but it's BittyMartin.com, and thank you for asking, Dan.
Thank you so much. And you will, with this book, have told the story of your friend, Kathy Ward, the story that, till this point, has been unknown. So I want to thank you so much for this interview. Snake Eyes, Murder in a Southern Town. It's been fascinating. Thank you so much, Biddy Martin. You have a great evening and good night.
Thank you, Dan.
Good night.